I see the Deputy Minister is in. Welcome, Deputy Minister. I've not seen the Commissioner, but I see his team is here. I want to welcome them as well. And everybody who's in attendance, the meeting. I want us to get straight to it. Deputy Minister, if you have any remarks to make before we get to the presentation, go ahead.
Good morning, Chairperson, and members of the Portfolio Committee. Colonel Chairperson, can you confirm if I'm audible? First of all, Chairperson, if you'll allow me, let me pay tribute to King Zwelithini, who has passed on this morning after a spell of time in hospital. The details are not yet formally available of what led to his death. But I am requesting that after I have delivered my opening remarks, if it's fine with the committee, I be allowed, because there are interviews that I'm requested to make regarding his passing. On that note, then, Chairperson, I may proceed to deliver my opening remarks.
Proceed, Deputy Minister.
Thank you, sir. Honorable members, Commissioner of, Mr. Mkabele, who is standing on behalf of the National Commissioner and other officials of the Department of Correctional Services, good morning. Honorable Chairperson and members of the committee, we have tasked us to present today the status quo as it relates to remand detainees with a bail of less than 1,000 rand and the management of remand detainees during the COVID-19 pandemic in the Department of Correctional Services. The global health community continues to grapple with the effects of COVID-19 pandemic. And as a department, we are a microcosm of such a community, therefore not an exception. The COVID-19 pandemic negatively affects our health system, the economy, and the overall well-being of citizens. Our engagement with the committee today is focused on the management of remand detainees by the department to the extent that this aspect impacts on our overall functioning as a department and how it also relates to the perennial issue of overcrowding in our facilities. Chairperson, it is critical that remand detainees and all other citizens continue to strictly adhere to interventions and protocols put in place by government, which include physical distancing, wearing of masks, and frequent washing of hands with soap and water, or regular sanitation of hands in order to minimize the spread of COVID-19. Honorable members, it is a fact that the Department of Correctional Services is at the front end of the criminal justice system through the detention of remand detainees and its tail end through the detention and eventual release of convicted and sentenced offenders. It is increasingly evident that DCS does not have a silver bullet as a solution to the thorny issue of overcrowding and the attendant risks to our officials and inmates brought about by the advent of the COVID-19 pandemic. Clearly, a multi-pronged strategy and or implementation plan driven by all the relevant sector departments in the criminal justice system is what is required to mitigate, if not eliminate in the long run, the issue of overcrowding. That said, today we are here to share with you our endeavors to confront the immediate challenges posed by those who cannot afford bail of 1,000 rand and less. In the presentation to be shared with you, there are 3,337 remand detainees that are in detention as they cannot afford to pay. This then places undue pressure on the DCS system as a whole. We also share our thinking in terms of the legislative and policy framework to find workable solutions. In this regard, we shall inter alia highlight Chapter 9, Section 63A of the Criminal Procedure Act that deals with the amendment of bail conditions for accused persons for their release on account of prison conditions, an arrangement known as the bail protocol. Chairperson, I shall now hand over to Mr. Mkabela, who is standing in on behalf of the National Commissioner, who unfortunately has to go and see a doctor this morning, and his team to make the presentation in full. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mkabela, I'm going to invite you to make the presentation. You have between 25 minutes to make that presentation, and I need enough time for the members to engage in a discussion. Thank you. Mr. Mkabela.
Am I audible, Chairperson?
Yes.
Am I audible, Chairperson?
You are audible. Can the presentation be flighted and you go ahead?
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. May I request Mr. Zigalala to flight the presentation? While she's doing that, let me greet you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee of Justice and Correctional Services, our National Commissioner in Absentia, Senior Leadership of the Department of Correctional Services, ladies and gentlemen, Honorable Chairperson and Members of the Portfolio Committee, thank you once again for the opportunity to engage with you on matters of critical importance to ensure justice delivers on its mandate in an effective and efficient manner. The beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic in December 2019, the global health community continues to grapple with the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic, which negatively affects our health system, the economy, and overall well-being of our citizens. Chairperson, it is critical to mention that remand detainees and all individuals continue with strict adherence to interventions and protocols put in place by our government.
Just pause there. Sia, I did see the presentation, it was flighted before we started. Can we have it on screen, please? Apology, Mr. Mkabela, just pause there because we want to follow you as you go through this quickly.
Okay.
Is there a problem for us flighting this, team? It was flighted.
Morning, Chair. Yes, Chair, we've managed to flight it. Usihle is back again. He's going to flight it now. Usihle, can you quickly flight the presentation or we will have to flight it on our side?
I am still disabled. Can you please allow me to...
Yes, you are a co-host, huh?
Can I continue, Chairperson?
Go ahead, Mr. Mkabela.
We are at slide 4 now. Chairperson, while the strategies for reducing the inmate population are driven from the department's angle through Section 63 and 63A, of the Criminal Procedure Act 51 of 1997, as well as Section 49G of Correctional Services Act 111 of 1998 as amended. The management of overcrowding should be regarded as the criminal justice system challenge. Therefore, all the critical stakeholders should play an effective role in ensuring that the imprisonment is utilized as a last resort, and as such, utilized for a certain category of inmates, such as the high-risk offenders. Honorable Chair, Section 63, as contemplated in the Act, if a head of the prison is satisfied that the prison population of a particular prison is reaching proportions that it constitutes a material and imminent threat to the human dignity, physical health, or safety of accused, and the head of the prison may apply to the said court for 1AA, release of accused on warning in lieu of bail, or BB, amendment of the bail conditions imposed by the court on the accused as per Criminal Procedure Act 51 of 1997, 63A1. The measures put in place and within the legal framework: 1, referral of remand detainees to court in terms of Section 63 of the Criminal Procedure Act, and 49G referral, the Correctional Services Act, are also the only two strategies that DCS employs to reduce the overpopulation of remand detainees. Referral of certain categories of remand detainees to court for bail review in line with Section 63A and Section 63(1) of the Criminal Procedure Act 51 of 1997. The third strategy, referral of remand detainees to court for consideration of their length of detention before completing the period of 2 years in line with Section 49G of the Correctional Services Act. Subsequently, applications are submitted annually if the court decides that the remand detainee should continue with detention. For a virtual court appearance by remand detainees who have been booked for audiovisual remand for postponement of cases in line with Section 159A to D of the Criminal Procedure Act. Audiovisual remand system is implemented by 47 courts linked to 22 correctional facilities across the country to facilitate the appearance of accused persons detained at the correctional facility in court without having to transport them to the correctional facility to the courthouse. Chairperson, with regards to remand detainee with bail less than 1,000 rand, a total of 3 bail with bail amounts ranging from 100,000 rand as at 31 January 2021. The head count cases were 3,299 cases, and of the 3,299 head count cases, 8 remand detainees were granted 100 rand bail, whilst 132 remand detainees were granted bail of 1,000 rand. In addition, Chairperson, 1,439 remand detainees were granted bail of 500 rand. Of the 3,299 remand detainees that were granted bail of 1,000 rand and less, 3,148 of them were males, whilst 151 of them were females. The provinces with the highest number of females were Western Cape with 66, Gauteng with 33, KwaZulu-Natal with 22, Eastern Cape with 10, 20, whilst the provinces with the lowest numbers of females were Mpumalanga with 4 and Northern Cape with 6. Free State, Limpopo and Northwest did not have females granted bail in the ranges mentioned of 1,000 and less. Bail review applications submitted in the first quarter of 2020-21 and only 1,200 and quarter 2,600 and out of those and only 896 were successful. Sharing of information of remand detainees with relevant cluster departments. The department also continues to share information of remand detainees longer than 2 years with relevant cluster partners such as the Department of Justice, NPA, Legal Aid, South Africa, and Office of the Chief Justice. The information shared includes the complete list of RDs so that the focus of those detainees for those detained for 3 months and below can be provided since they constitute a larger portion of remand detainees. Alternative management of RDs as per the legislation during COVID-19. In April 2020, a virtual meeting which was organized by the Ministry of Justice and Correctional Services to discuss the strategies that can be put in place to reduce the population of remand detainees during the lockdown period. The proposals made by DCS were as follows. The Department of Correctional Services to be allowed to continue with the submissions of applications to court of all remand detainees with bail for review of their bail in line with Section 63A and 63(1) of the Criminal Procedure Act. B, submission of application for the first month of detention instead of third month. And C, submission of applications for consideration of the length of detention of remand detainees detained longer than 2 years, 69G of the Correctional Services Act. D, since providing the name list to the relevant stockholders, NPA commenced with the review of bail through the use of Section 63(1) of the Criminal Procedure Act in consultation with relevant courts, and this has led to DCS receiving warrants of liberation for certain categories of RDs. The implementation of J1 requires that DCS verifies the authenticity of the court order through the courts. With the limited functioning of the courts, NPA was advised that all the electronic communications to DCS regarding the J1 should be accompanied by details of prosecutor and or clerk of the court so that DCS at the center level can call for verifying the J1 warrant. In the efforts to manage overcrowding during the lockdown and reducing the spread of the coronavirus in correctional facilities, where remand detainees are detained, the department detention continues to submit applications for bail review and Section 49G. The period of incarceration of remand detainees as determined by Section 49G of Correctional Services Act must not exceed 2 years from the initial date of admission into the remand detention facility. The department ensures that any remand detainee who have exceeded the period of 2 years is brought to the attention of the relevant court. No remand detainee shall be brought before the court in terms of the mentioned section if such remand detainee has appeared before a court 3 months immediately prior to the expiry of such 2 years, 2 years period, and the court during that appearance considered the continued detention of such detainee. DCS, working together with the
Mr. Mkabela, we're losing you. Mr. Mkabela, please reposition yourself better. We're losing you. You're cutting.
Of public prosecution reports the intervals all cases of remand. Yeah. Oh, okay. I apologize for that. Honorable Chair, can you hear me now?
Better, much better. Please go ahead. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Chair. As part of educating the public on the importance of alternative bail review, Section 49G referrals and the department continues to leverage in the implementation of district development model as part of advocacy and partnership in educating the communities on the purpose of bail and other non-custodial options such as police bail, warning, and placement under supervision by the correctional officer. Section 49G applications such submitted to court in the first quarter of 2020-21 were 1,599 with successes that mounted to 908. In the second quarter, 1,995 applications were submitted and the successes totaled 822. Moreover, a total of 2,217 applications were submitted to court and 789 applications were successful. Management of remand detainee during the COVID-19 pandemic, Chairperson and honorable members, the unplanned turbulent onset of the COVID-19 pandemic exacerbated the prevailing unstable and uncontrollable situation at the time and incrementally of the remand detainee in our facility. Let me pause for a minute. May the souls of the remand detainees who passed on as a result of COVID-19, rest in peace. Despite the fact that the country returned to level 1 of the national lockdown, a significant increase in the movement of remand detainees attending courts and those admitted at our facilities. Increased movement and admission to remand detainee facilities centers add to increases in overcrowding and remain a threat against efforts to mitigate and contain further infection. Amongst others, the movements, courts, admissions and release of remand detainees, bail payments, medical appointments and transfers, movements to hospitals, etc. In terms of the visits, in alert level 5 to 3, visits by members of the public to correctional centers and remand detention facilities are suspended except for essential and permitted services, service providers as provided for in the regulation. During alert level 1, visits by members of the public to correctional centers and remand detention facilities are allowed in terms of risk applications. From alert to applications to court for existing and new RPDs within 1 week from admission to correctional facilities who are unable to raise bail were prioritized and disposed of expeditiously to alleviate overcrowding in remand detention facilities. All admitted inmates are screened immediately on admission, temperature screened through the use of hand. All admission are quarantined for 14 days before distributed to the housing unit. If the next court date falls within the 14 days quarantine period, the RD are allowed to go to court if he or she does not have presumptive symptoms. Screening in our housing units. The screening of inmates in housing units are done by the professional nurses daily. B, presumptive cases identified are reported and quarantined. Testing of all inmates that have tested positive are isolated in the designated area RDs. Notification of the family with regard to the determine designated areas. Contravention of COVID-19 regulations. Chairperson, just to highlight, remand detainees admitted due to contravention of COVID-19 regulations. KwaZulu-Natal had a total of 157, Western Cape 125, Limpopo, Mpumalanga Northwest 177, Free State and Northern Cape at the highest at 394. Gauteng was the lowest at the 800. Speak that the budget cuts on the compensation of employees have serious implication on the managing of remand detainees for the department in the current financial year and in the medium-term expenditure framework period and requires urgent political intervention to prevent the delivery of services being affected negatively, especially capacity culminating in a crisis for the country going forward. In conclusion, Honorable Chairperson and members, the Department of Service Delivery is being hampered and is consistently contemplating, implementing and reviewing remedial and corrective measures to ensure optimal delivery in a skills, health, and finance. I wish once again to to thank the committee for the opportunity to engage and eagerly anticipate your valuable insight and guidance. Honorable Jefferson, our deputy commissioner, remand detention, our CDC, strategic management, that I'm going to work with them in terms of responses and addressing issues that might be raised by the committee. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mkabela, for the presentation. With some glitches where we missed you in certain areas, but you stayed on time. I mean, thank you for that. That gives us more time to engage with the presentation and kind of assist what needs to happen. And now I'm going to note members who wants to make an intervention and contribute to this. Start with James South, followed by Honorable Mfokeng, and followed by Honorable Valma, in that order.
Thank you very much indeed, Chairperson. And I
can
answer but I hope I got all of it. Let me ask.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Self. Just come closer to your mic. Now we want to hear you properly. We're a bit far.
All right. Is that any better?
Thank you.
Okay. I was saying that I found it very difficult to follow, but I hope I got the gist of it. The first question I want to ask is Section 63A of the Criminal Procedure Act, which allows a head of prison to approach a court. And the wording of that section is quite explicit. It says that if a head of prison contemplating it, so on, is satisfied the prison population a particular prison is reaching such proportions that it constitutes a material and imminent threat to human dignity, physical health or safety of an accused, etc. Now that's quite an evidential mountain to climb, and remand detainees are normally kept in a separate part of the center. So it's not the center as a whole, it's only part of the center. But we all know that remand detention facilities are horrendously overcrowded with people sleeping on the floor. Facilities just can't cope with the numbers. What I want to know is how many successful applications have actually been launched under Section 63A. Secondly, I would like to know whether there are any detainees in incarceration at the moment who have been in remand detention for more than 2 years, notwithstanding the act we passed some time ago? And if so, why are they still in detention and what is being done about it? Thirdly, a number of detainees could legitimately be released if the department's community corrections branch was properly resourced and effective. And the same goes for people on parole. I just wonder that because the community corrections branch does not engender confidence by the judiciary, a number of people who might have been released on bail or on reduced bail or on warning are not released because the judiciary does not have enough confidence in community corrections. And finally, there used to be a case management committee established in correctional services facilities. That brought together the Department of Justice, the police, Department of Correctional Services, and social development. Are those case management committees still in existence? And is there a case management committee in every correctional center in South Africa? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable South. As we always do, back to you, Mr. Mkabela, and your team. It's a return of service before I proceed to the next member.
Chairperson?
Yes, Mr. Katenga.
With all protocol observed, and I do not want to precede my principal, but what I would like to indicate, more especially on the last comment, about confidence in the community correction system. And I might be repeating myself, but I think it's critical that we need to understand that it can't be a correctional services issue. The issue of inspiring confidence in community corrections, because community corrections involves social development, the policing sector, etc. So for the Department of Correctional Services to actually be sponsoring that becomes a bit of a challenge. We need to be able to say that yes, community policing forums and the utilization of social development resources, and the fact that if we put somebody within the community correction system, yes, whilst we are able to monitor the fact that they are complying, but what are the interventions from a health and a mental health or whatever perspective, and whatever, you know, social interventions, how do we get that right? And I know, Chairperson, you did say the last time that there are things that we should do and there are things that should be done in a broader perspective. So I would really like to say that comment must be looked at in that broader perspective, so that we can take it to other clusters to say that actually an offender is not DCS's problem solely. It is a community problem. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Katenga. Any other additions from the team?
Yes, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Cynthia Ramalipo, Chief Deputy Commissioner, Remand Detention. I would like to respond in terms of Section 63A. Slide number 20 has a breakdown in terms of quarter one, 63 applications submitted to court. During the quarter one, we had a total of 3,700, and the success was 1,280, which gives us a total percentage of 34.59. Our second quarter referrals on terms of Section 63, we had a total of 2,635, and we received a success of 1,123 with a percentage of 42.62%. The third quarter, just ending December, we had 63 applications submitted to court, which are total of 3,541, and the success was only 896. Which is 25% percent in terms of percentage. The challenge with regards to the application on the third month, as per those agreements, was that there was an increase on number of RDs with the bills that are below 3 months in terms of the length of detention. I just needed to answer the first question in terms of how many, and I've break down into the three quarters. The second question in terms of the remandees who are more than 2 years in our facility. The COC, which is Mr. Manda Mkabela, did touch on the remandees that are more than 2 years in terms of the alternative measures that we are having in place. Due to Schedule 7 crimes, in terms of flight number 7, some of those are not able to be attended to due to that, the dependence on the SAFS investigation. Some are the cases that are multiple in terms of the remandee. So they were not able to be attended to and finalized by court, but we keep on raising our referrals and indicating so that during our cluster meeting, they are being addressed. I also want to touch on the issues. I think my colleague has already touched the issues of releasing the RDs with warning and being managed in the community corrections. I will just not go more in details on that because we are working on ensuring that all the cluster pay attention because it's a dependent function. But however, I will leave it to that we continuously having a court optimization monthly meetings at national, provincial, and also local at a local center. That is accompanied by the provincial efficiency enhancement committees that correctional service it is participating on ensuring the case management systems in terms of backlogs of the cases. We are participating in those cluster forums throughout on the monthly basis per center, per province, and also for national. Thank you.
Sorry, Chair, can I just
question? Thank you. No, hold back. I'll come back to you, Honorable Self. Any other additions to the two respondents?
Yes, Chair. I would like to add also to the responses that were made. My name is Vuyim Lomondlovu. There was a question that was asked with regard to the case management committees that constitute of several role players. The case management system that involves the remand detainees, it does not happen in the Department of Correctional Services. The case management committees that we have, they are for the processes of the Department of Correctional Services. When you come to the case management, where the whole case will be discussed, unfortunately, the Department of Correctional Services does not participate because that's a court process. That court process, it involves the three role players. Those role players is the prosecutor and the investigator. And then the decision is made by the judiciary. So with us, in as much as we can submit, we submit these applications. But when they are considered, it's a process that the Department of Correctional Services does not participate because all the case-related issues, they are based on the information in the docket and the information that is kept by the prosecutor. So, sir, I just wanted to clarify that really, as correctional services, we've got little influence on the decision that has to be made by the court. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. We now can proceed. Honorable Self, would you please hold back on your follow-up? I know you wanted to get in on that explanation.
Okay.
Are you okay with that?
So that's fine. Just,
okay.
Fine.
Thank you. Honorable Lufuke?
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. Chair, my first question will be on the intersectoral implementation of the Child Justice Act, which highlighted that in the year 2019 and 2020 financial year, there were 61 remand children in DCS facilities. while the annual report of VCS stipulates that there were 58 remand children in the same period. Can I get a clarity on this discrepancy in the figures? The second one will be on the issue of do you have, actually, let me start with this one. How do you deal with the lone remand children in their facilities, especially, you know, understanding the challenges there? What kind of specific programs are you providing for these children? And Chair, I think on the questions that were asked by Honourable Self, I've been covered with the answers. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mofokeng. Can we get the response to the issues raised by Honourable Mofokeng? Mr. Mkabela and team. Who will respond?
Okay, Chair, I will respond, Chair. With regards to the annual report figures on children, in the annual report, the figures that have been utilized, in the child justice report, we use the calendar year when we report. And then in the annual report, we use the financial years. If you look then at our figures, they will never be the same because the calendar year, it starts from January up to December. And then the financial year starts from April up to March. So when we report on the two, it has always been different. Yeah, because in the child justice report, we have been using the calendar years. It's because we didn't want to change the format of reporting for the child justice report. And then when it comes to lone children, the number of lone children has really drastically reduced because this is one of the issues that was handled in the Intersectoral Committee for Child Justice. It was an issue that the lead department, which is Department of Justice, was concerned about. So the Department of Correctional Services was advised that if we've got a lone child, we can even communicate with the court and request for a placement of these children in secure care facilities. But what has happened, the lone children have reduced. I think the reduction also is based on the fact that the number of children in general in correctional services, the remand detainee children, they are reducing because now they are less than 100. So how they are managed, the lone children, they are still kept separate from the sentence offenders. And then in order to keep them busy, the centers, we requested them to ensure that they have got board games because they cannot be missed. But some of the lone children, they have not been attending any classes before they were arrested. But their numbers have drastically reduced. They don't stay longer in correctional services because they are appearing in court every 2 weeks. So even if you see them, it's not a child that was here. It's a different face altogether. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Proceed if there's no other addition.
Chair.
Hold back, Honourable Mofokeng. I know it's a follow-up. I'm holding back follow-ups. Honourable Brayton Velma first.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. I hope that I'm not repeating a question. If I am, my apologies in advance. I would like to go to slide 3. I would like a more detailed explanation there. I would have preferred a more detailed explanation, but I will go ahead with a question. On the left top of slide 3, the sentence, um, Sorry, interpreters just waiting for clarification. Or the unsentenced. So on the top left of slide 3, it says unsentenced. It says unsentenced remand detainees involuntary then mental health care users and deportation group no longer detained. What do you mean there by that description? Can you clarify that description? And then at the bottom of that same column, it says facilities 244 and then 235 functional with a question mark. Why is there a question mark there? Does it mean it's not functional? What is the reason for that? And then you have two different numbers for facilities, 244 and 235. Why is there a difference there? And why do you have two categories of facilities? Okay, so that would be my first question. Then moving on to Honorable Mufokeng asked about the lone children. I'm not really clear because you said they have board games. So do they play board games alone? These remand lone children, they don't get any kind of education at all. And, you know, they play board games and do they play them by themselves? And I was kicked out of the meeting. I think you had just answered, or you're just speaking about the five-year remand detainees. I would like to know, and I'd like to add to what Honorable Self asked, is what are the issues that contributing to these long detentions of remand detainees? And then, okay, so I think, oh no, I still have a question. I was sent a video of a female inmate showing contraband. So she was showing contraband, and contraband is not from the visitors, according to her, it's from the officials themselves. However, this, you know, this person was giving a, you know, what she was putting across is that she wanted to speak to the minister during his visit, and then she was moved to another center before she could speak to the minister. And after the minister had conducted his visit, she was returned to this facility. There are other things that are alleged in that video. What is the department doing in terms of the allegations there? I mean, this video has gone viral on social media. It really does not look good. What is the department doing in this regard? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Can I get responses? Mr. Mkabela and your team.
Honorable Chairperson, I will start with regards to the programs and the services for the children, remand children. Let me indicate that there are soft life skills course, which is also being given to children. Some children attend more than one program. Some are more life skills, which is assisting them. There's also indoor sports that they are also being given. Let me also move to the question with regards to the facility. If you note on the annual report, in terms of the 244 facility, the question is some of the facilities are under maintenance, especially the remand facilities that, as a result of banned public works, it's working on them, and the remandees has been moved to another facilities. So the active are 235, while the other facilities that, as a result of the facility program with public works, are under public works program in terms of maintenance, and they've been for a while. But however, that is the question mark that I by mistake left it just to differentiate the two in terms of what we reported on the annual report and what is active in terms of the remand facility. I think I will pause there and allow DC also to add. DC Mulomo, thank you.
Thank you, thank you. Chair, I will respond on the question with regards to the unsentenced. When you look at the area of unsentenced, we had the categories that are involuntary mental health care users and the deportation group. With the involuntary mental health care users, these were the forensic cases who come to DCS as remand detainees, but they are subjected to forensic assessment. Then the court would either decide that would declare you a state patient or an involuntary mental health care user. Then it was agreed in one of the mental health conferences that the involuntary mental health care users have to be diverted. They don't need to come and wait in DCS for a bed. So, but we could not implement that till the Criminal Procedure Act, Chapter 13 was amended. So after the after Chapter 13 was amended to allow for that diversion, then DCS linked up with the Department of Health, Mental Health, so that we facilitate the removal of all the involuntary mental health care users that were in DCS. But the aim was that these people should not even come to DCS. So the process has been gradually converting into them decreasing. When we check, but we decided that let's just leave them in our state so that we can monitor them. But this year, the figures have really been reducing. We have been having zeros. When it comes to the deportation group, there are those illegal immigrants that were arrested by the Department of Home Affairs. These were not the clients of the criminal justice. So these were referred, this category, to the Department of Home Affairs. Then there was one of the illegal immigrants who took the matter to court. And his concern was that he was detained with people that have committed crimes, of which he didn't commit crime. So according to the court case then, it was found that it was illegal for DCS to detain the deportation group because we were not promulgated in terms of the Immigration Act. There is a section that allows the Department of Home Affairs to promulgate the centers that have to detain their category of offenders. So because we had overcrowding, then DCS used that judgment as a pull-out clause. So we sort of pull out. Then what then Department of Home Affairs did, declared several police stations to operate as the facilities for detaining those people. So those people were gradually removed from the DCS based on the judgment. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Any other addition? None. Can I now move to Honorable...
Chair, can I follow up?
No, you know the drill. You know the drill. All follow-ups come at the end. Glenys Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, and good morning to everybody. I want to follow on to the question asked by the Honourable Self with regards to community corrections. I'm sure I misunderstood the answer given. So if somebody could just clear it up for me. I understood the answer to say that DCAS cannot be held responsible for community corrections, and that it's an amalgamation of departments, and therefore it's not really DCAS's problem. Well, I'm assuming that I misunderstood, because that simply can't be the case. Community corrections falls under their program. They have a budget for it. And I can assure you, Mr. Chair, I'm sure you'll agree with me, that if something goes wrong while somebody's out on parole and under the auspices of community corrections, where are you going to go? You're going to go to DCS. So please, if somebody could clear up that rather bizarre answer that was supplied. I'm sure I misunderstood it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Glenys Breitenbach. I think that it was your opportunity to ask, but I think you've intervened on a follow-up. And on that basis, I'm going to go back to Honourable Self to ask his follow-up, followed by Honourable Mofokeng and Honourable Velma Nivo Drachen. We'll put all them together, and then the department responds. Honourable Self.
Thank you very much indeed, Chairperson. The Honourable Breitenbach has asked the first follow-up question that I wanted to ask. But I come back to that question that I asked about Section 63, and I'm aware that that table did provide statistics of the number of people who had been released. But Section 63 has two different provisions that allow one to either convert to or reduce bail conditions. The one is Section 63.1, and the other one is Section 63A. I was asking specifically about Section 63A. How many successful applications were there in terms of Section 63A? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I think that's pretty clear. Honorable Self, thank you for that. Honourable Mofokeng.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I think I'm not comfortable with the answer on the annual report numbers of the remand children and the one that is given on the annual report on the DCS when they report to us. I think that cannot be right. There should be one number and it must be convincing. But the minute when somebody has to tell me about we are going to use this date to determine this date, it's not a true reflection. Then when is the 61 and then you tell me about the 58? Where is the 3 and how do you account to it? And I think that should be something that that discrepancy is something that they must deal with it in the future, because it's not going to be showing in Parliament that you are really honest about that. The second question on the issue that was asked by the follow-up actually of my question was done by Honourable Neil Vogt Drachen on the issue of the programs of the children. And I think I will leave it there because I'm covered. But still, her question is going to be a follow-up and I'm going to leave it to her. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Neil Vogt Drachen.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I noted my question with regards to the 5-year detention was not answered, because I asked what are the issues that caused this long detention. If it was answered already, I apologize. Then secondly, it was said with regard to detainees, remand detainees under mental health. Healthcare users who were moved to where as they were awaiting assessment. Now, when they are moved to where, are they still considered as remand detainees or when they are moved, what are they viewed as? Maybe they've been charged with a crime, but they still have to go for the assessment for mental health. Are they still considered as remand detainees or not? And then, let me just have a look. The video was not responded to that I mentioned. Is there no comment on that? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Mkabela and your team. Please respond to all of those follow-ups. I'm sure you have taken note of the follow-ups and what members are looking for. I hand over to you and your team.
Thank you. Thank you. I will respond to this one of moving people from the Department of Correctional Services, especially the involuntary mental health care users. When the involuntary mental health care users are moved from the Department of Correctional Services, it's the closure of the forensic process. The forensic process, it closes. There are three options of closing it. The court may declare you an involuntary mental health care user, which means the whole case has been closed, a decision has been made. So hence those people, when they were sitting in DCS, the process of being a remand detainee was already closed, but we were keeping them because they were waiting for a bed at the health establishment, not necessarily mental health, because the involuntary mental health care users can also be treated in any healthcare establishment. So now the process is managed by the Department of Health. The courts can refer them directly to those health establishments because there's a list that was determined by the forensic unit of health on where these people should be referred. Then I will then respond also to the second question with regard to the people that are staying longer than 5 years. For me, what I want to say, where I am as correctional services, if a person stays for more than 5 years, we don't have the court records of those people. But what we have picked up through the analysis, people that are staying longer are the people that have got co-accused in their in terms of their cases. Some of the people, there's the changing of lawyers. Yeah. And then when they change lawyers, also the case is taking long. And then some, what we've picked up also, the cases are moving from the lower court to the regional court. And some of the cases, they are shifted to the high court. But I have to say, in terms of our analysis, a lot of the cases, they fall under the regional court. But most of these cases, they start at the lower court before they are sent to regional court. So, but also in the analysis that we have picked up, what contributes to the delay is also that most of the cases are postponed. Yeah, and the reasons for postponement at times, all the reasons for postponement, they are never communicated to DCS. But some of the reasons, it's the failure to appear by the witnesses in court. So it's a myriad of the factors, but all those factors, they are not known to correctional services. So for us, we just monitor the time spent in detention. So thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Chairperson. Chair, apologies. Can I please ask the hosts to unpin me because I can't see the interpreter screen. I've typed and asked. Thank you.
Okay. Let's hold back, Mr. Katenga. Is that sorted now?
Yes, Chair.
Okay. Mr. Katenga, go ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe my view would be to say that there needs to be a more concerted view with regards to how the justice and the meeting out of justice and the perception of justice translates into how the correctional system works, because we are dealing with as DC Mlomo Ndlovu has said that we are dealing with issues that maybe we shouldn't even have to be engaging in. So I would just want to put it out there to say that the committee must assist us in engaging with police and etc.
Understand.
Are you done, Mr. Katenga?
I don't understand that answer.
Yes, I am, Chair.
Okay, come back to that. The next one to respond. The next person to respond from the team on the questions that were raised, follow-ups.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Mkavela speaking. In terms of the numbers that are not tallying, we are going to make a follow-up on that and respond in writing to the committee as to why those discrepancies and how they are going to be fixed moving forward. That's the input, Chair. Thanks.
All right. Any other persons on the team? Honorable Glenys Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now I'm more puzzled than I was at the start. I also don't understand that answer. It smacks of passing the buck. I don't know what they're trying to tell us. Are they not responsible for doing their job? If they're not responsible for it, who is responsible for it? It's not acceptable. This is not a game. This committee is actually quite serious. We're trying to deal with serious issues. And then somebody says, you need to help us deal with the police. What is that? I'd like an answer to the question.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Self?
No, I reiterate what the Honorable Breitenbach said. I mean, I just simply don't understand Mr. Katenga's answer. I don't know what he's saying.
Yeah, thank you. Any other member before I go back to the team and then I will come in as a summary? Yes, Honorable Katenga.
I still will be worried about the answer because there's a comment from the Auditor General about the discrepancies. Can they explain themselves on that? That okay. Answer still is not convincing.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Mkabela and your team, members are raising unhappiness about the responses. Do you want to improve the responses or get your last chance on the responses before I come in?
Chairperson?
We'll hold Cynthia back. Go ahead, to Mr.
Chairperson. It's CDC is also respond. There was a question.
Mr. Katenga?
Chair, we, without trying to delve into areas beyond my scope of reference, there is a transition that we are trying to bridge between prisons and corrections. And if we are talking about corrections does not begin with somebody coming into a facility of detention. Corrections begins in the society. And hence, when you look at the white paper on corrections, it talks about it being a societal responsibility. So if the responsibility of engaging with somebody who has been dysfunctional being the responsibility of a budget vote of X amount of money that was actually meant to detain people. And then we are supposed to fix a person who has been dysfunctional from their youth because of societal problems. And Chair, I really need to emphasize this, is that we can't proceed in this manner. It can't be that somebody must come to us and then we must fix them. Society must fix itself so that people don't come to us. We don't need to exist, to be quite honest. Chairperson, I think if I make that statement, I am covering what I need to say. I beg your pardon for my approach. But
thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go to the next response. Any other response, team? There was a CDC, Cynthia wanted to say something.
Okay, maybe they could ask while they're about it about the difference between 63.1 and 63A.
Yes, I'm waiting for that. You've repeated that twice. Mr. Mkabela, can you assist us?
Chair, I can assist with regards to 63.1 and 63A.
Yes.
63A, it's a provision in the Criminal Procedure Act. The submission of application for review is based on the prison conditions. So it's the one where it must be the prison condition and the RD must have been charged for Schedule 7 crimes. So with that one, the biggest problem that we have is that in as much as some of the RDs that we have, you would see that the crimes are Schedule 7. We have to verify with NPA. When we verify with NPA, at times, that person does not really have those Schedule 7 crimes as they appear in the warrant because the warrant has got a small space. So some of the crimes, they do not appear. But Section 63E1 is the provisions that allow the prosecutor or the accused to approach the court for bail review. So what DCS does, if a 63A throws you out, then we use 63.1. But 63.1, the RD must give consent because if the RD does not allow for the application to be submitted, there's nothing that DCS can do. Yeah, because the provision, it only allows a prosecutor or an accused. But when we report on the steps, we just combine the steps because those are the benefit of Section 63. So we don't split that this is Section 63.1 and then this is Section 63A. The information is split only in terms of the submission of application. Thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you. Last response before I come in.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I also just needed to respond. There was a question with regards to the video on the contrabands, which we will want to investigate it further and ensure that we address the concern, especially with the video, which we were not aware of the video. But we are going to investigate it and report back to the portfolio committee in terms of the person who has the video and so on. But also just to come in with regards to the community corrections, that part of our objective in terms of what the law requires is to actually afford offenders the opportunity to serve their sentence in a non-custodial manner. We also ensure that the lead of social responsibility and a crime-free life during the period of their sentence in future, it's actually within the mandate of the corrections. So I will want to humble ask that we come back and we give a detailed integrated approach, which is currently being led by one of the other CDC, so that we assure the portfolio committee in terms of community corrections in relation to the remand detention. And I think my colleague, she already answered on the Section 63, so I will not want to repeat on that one. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
All right. Mr. Mkabele, your last word.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. With regards to committee corrections, it is
okay, we have a problem here. Mr. Mkabele, hold there.
Because the offender.
We can't hear you. We can't hear you breaking up. You might want to just reposition, otherwise I would need to cut in. Thank you, Mr. Mkabele. Please pause there. You can stop there. Thank you very much.
The corrections is the
can you hear me? Can you hear me, Mr. Mkabele?
Our rehabilitation program.
Yeah. Can you hear me, Mr. Mkabele? Thank you. Please pause there.
Where?
Can you mute? Thank you, administration. Members, I think let me just come in here and I'd want to make some few... No, Mr. Mkabele, please.
Yes, I can hear you, Chair.
Stop there. Please, can you pause now? We can't hear you at all. Just pause. Thank you. Members, I just want to make a few comments that might take us to the way forward on this issue. I have two main interventions that I want to make, and I'm going to ask for your brief comment on those as part of the way forward. I think the first thing to say is I want to ask that the department goes back and prepare again for this presentation. We're going to put this back in our program in the next term to prepare for this presentation in a much better way, because they must answer the following question when they come back to us, whether what they have presented to us today and on that day is the best they can do under the circumstances. The question is what you're presenting us the best intervention that you can do? And secondly, what are the challenges and the problems that, so that in that you need to list in a paragraph or in bullet points or in a page, what are your blockages that you are not able, because what you have presented does not demonstrate any much improvement and progress, because the issue was wanted you to come here and tell us progress. We remain concerned about the progress as you have presented. There are quite a number of things that needs you to go back, put your heads together, your thinking cap, and come back to the subcommittee with concrete interventions and answers to these, where you are able to highlight to us what are those issues that are, you think, are outside of your control and that you can put in front of the committee for the assistance that you're asking. Because you've got to come back and answer to us, as raised by Honorable South, the issue of capacity in community corrections. What is the challenge? You have to indicate that this is how far DCS goes. Who are these other stakeholders that you are talking about, that you're saying this is a societal issue? Let's now for a moment the community part, because that's your lifelong kind of a challenge for this country, about the kind of society that we're building. We understand that, we accept that, because I said in the past, what's in correctional services is a reflection of how society is. That we understand. Please don't repeat that. But we're then asking what is then being done by the different stakeholders, and here it is DCS. So you need to answer those questions and clarify and indicate to us specifically. If you're saying it's a whole of society approach, the other stakeholders, highlight and list those stakeholders. Where are these stakeholders failing, so that we attend to that? You seem to be saying that the judicial caseflow management forum in each and every court is not effective. And we want you to be more specific about that, so that it's not just a generalized statement. You even went further to say, and I'm interested in this with my other hat from the Magistrate Commission, whether it's your district efficiency and effective committees, the regional court ones, the provincial and the national, would want to see where is the failure, where is the blockage in this. Members have raised that you need to attend more on the discrepancies of what you call a calendar year and financial year, so you work more on those. You have also referred to postponements that are not shared with DCS. I don't know what postponements these are. Are these postponements in courts? And are you saying to us, when a court sits, you don't know what an outcome of that, so that we know and we attend and close those kind of gaps? So I want members to ask that we send the team back on the same topic and the progress that we're looking for. I would not be honest in summarizing and say we're seeing much progress. For example, one of the issues that you've raised, which is very important, this issue of the rate of success. I will be interested in that there are so many in this RD. Here is an outcome of the court. There's a very huge gap between the two. You need to go into that space and indicate to us what makes this rate of success so low so that we're able to attend to that issue. And some of those things might not be correctional services matters, but you're in control. But it's important that they get ventilated, presented to us, so that as a committee, we're able to interact with anybody that is responsible. That's my first suggestion, intervention members. And the second one, it was very difficult in this meeting to connect, firstly hearing from you presenting, but at the same time in the responses, sometimes we don't get, you cut through the process. And this is a matter we're going to have to discuss as a committee, that when we come back, when we develop the program for the next term, we might want to agree, honorable members, that we are going to, it's, we're now at alert level one, we might want to balance between some meetings that are going to be physical in Parliament, because in one meeting will always be less than 50, so that there is no breakage of communication. Everybody is in under one roof. We deal with the matter, we get the answers, nobody disappearing act, because it's getting frustrated. So that's also what is the homework that we're going to need to think about, because these meetings only take place on Friday. I just wanted to make that as part of the way forward. Any comments, honorable members, on that?
We agree to
that. It's a great chair in particular. When you say at some point we need to have face-to-face meetings, because we would not be breaking any regulations if we do. We are too few, and Parliament has got a lot of spaces where we're going to even observe social distancing. So we agree, chair. You have summarized it very, very well.
Thank you, Honorable Paula Ngola. Any other member?
Chair, we said we agree. We've also committed the Honorable Ngola.
Oh, all right. Okay. Thank you. In terms of the both suggestions, the first one is that we're saying they must go back. In effect, what I'm saying there is that we want a second round of this presentation, a much more improved one on the same issues. And I'm falling short of saying we're not happy with what we have received today. You find issues. Honorable Sir?
Yeah, we agree, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much, members.
Honourable Wilma has a hand up. Sorry, Chair.
Yes, Wilma.
Thank you, Chair. Apologies, I have to use a different device. I agree with your summary and your way forward. I would like to add that we should have entered the fourth industrial revolution, and the department should be using AVR and should strengthen the use of the AVRs. It should not only be about the members using virtual systems, virtual platforms, but the department should also gear up and strengthen their capabilities in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Nivot. That's agreed and supported, but as we know, they don't even have a drafting committee, a drafting capacity, as we had when we dealt with the amendments in the bill. So that seems to be a long way out. We're not going to be delayed by that, because you are right. They're supposed to be much well capacitated. This is a multi-billion department. They have a huge budget. So those things are supposed to be in place. Thank you, Honorable Velma. Mr. Mkabele and your team, you are released. Honorable members and Sia, I think that was the only item.
Yes, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable members. The meeting
is adjourned.
The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair.